This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, which recently celebrated the grand opening of its all-new golf course. The rebirth of this historic course is now available for both members and non-members and located conveniently between Milwaukee and Madison in the beautiful rolling hills of Oconomowoc. See what all of the talk is about with this remake of one of the oldest courses in the state and test your game with native fescue grasses, undulating greens, and Scottish roots. Book your tee time today at clubatlaclabelle.com. Welcome into Talking.Golf here on Wisconsin.Golf. I'm Rob, he's Gary, and we have a lot to talk about today. Gary D'Amato, you had the opportunity to play Blue Mound Golf and Country Club. We had a lot of stuff happening in terms of the season of golf in California for me, and it's about to come down in Wisconsin. We'll talk about that in a minute, and then a whole bunch of competitive golf, starting with the Women's State Amateur at Blackhawk. George Kneiser of Green Bay shoots 63 to qualify for a Corn Ferry event. I don't know, Gary, did you shoot 63 at Blue Mound today? And are we going to see any 63s when the Wisconsin State Open goes there next month?
It depends who plays in the State Open. We're, you know, there's some tour players who have signed up, Skip Kendall and Mark Wilson, and it's going to be a great field. So I wouldn't doubt that someone could shoot that number at Blue Mound. But, you know, it didn't happen in qualifying for the U.S. Amateur back in 2011 when Blue Mound was the co-host course with Heron Hills for stroke play qualifying. They didn't eat it up then, and those were some pretty terrific players. So I think 63 is asking a lot from someone at Blue Mound. Rob, I just love the place. It's in perfect condition, as it always is. It's one of the best conditioned courses in the state. Credit goes to Alex Beeson-Crone, the superintendent there, who does a great job. And they've taken out a lot of trees in recent years, which has happened at a lot of golf courses. You know, that planted trees in the 40s and 50s, and then the trees grew up and, you know, sort of affected the shot play, strategic value of the shots and the way the courses went to play when Seth Rayner designed it. So it's more open now. The green complexes are fantastic. I four putted twice today, Rob. Two four putts.
I wondered about that. I was going to ask, but you know, Gary, if you had to four putt on any greens in the state of Wisconsin, why not Blue Mound, you know?
Yeah. I did make a 50-foot bomb and I hold out a bunker shot. So I kind of made up for the four putts. It kind of balanced out, but it's a fun course to play. And I can't wait to see what they do at the 100th state open there in a few weeks.
On the one hand, the school of thought with classic courses like Blue Mound is the fact that you can only stretch them so far. So the bomb and gougers maybe don't enjoy the advantage, but I'm sure there's spots where you can be aggressive off the tee. But on that course, isn't it all about what you do in and around the greens?
It's definitely a second shot course, Rob, because the green complexes are well bunkered, multi-tiered greens with a lot of movement in them. And if you find yourself in a bad spot, short-sighted or on the wrong part of the green, you're going to three putt, or you're going to have a very hard time getting up and down. It's a second shot golf course. And so I would say guys who, you know, hit between their 8-iron and their 6-iron, those clubs are going to be, I think, in play a lot in the state open. And guys who control their ball flight and their distance control with those irons, I think are going to probably have a good week. And you got to putt there too.
Is it forgiving though in any area off the tee, or does it feel – with all those trees removed, does it still feel like you're kind of, you know, hitting down a hallway?
It's definitely forgiving. Although, you know, it's not really overly long, but par is 70. So it plays, you know, it plays longer than what the yardage says on the card because there's fewer par fives. But there's room off the tee on most holes. There's a couple tight driving holes, but for the most part, I think, you know, guys are going to rip driver and, you know, hit a 320 there. But it's what you do after that. You know, there's some long par fours. There's a couple of four. There's going to be a 475-yard par four and a couple in the 450 range. So, you know, the guys will be coming in with mid to short irons, and they're going to have to control their ball.
You've covered a number of state amateurs through the years, and the ones more recently have featured some pretty challenging golf courses. I think of Minocqua Country Club a couple of years ago. And even the last one that I covered was up at North Shore Menasha, that, you know, again, you know, you got to think your way around. What's impressed me, Gary, is how many of the young kids coming up are showing an ability to do that. It used to be that, you know, we groom these kids on some of the wide open courses back when the WPGA juniors played at Yahara, and then they'd be non-factors because they couldn't keep it between the trees at some of the courses that were in the rotation for the state amateur. We're seeing, you know, guys, the kids be able to do that. So now, you know, you talked about the field, you talked about the tour players, but we've got so many great collegians and high school kids, you know, Pearson Hunt, Harrison Ott, who are both coming off of good performances in the Southern Amateur. It really is everybody's ball game now, because these kids really know how to play these kind of courses somehow, some way.
That's definitely true, Rob. You know, back in the day, you know, high school kids and young college players would shoot 70s all day on their home course, or, you know, in friendly rounds or in some competitions. But then they'd get to the State Am and the State Open, and where you have to put rounds together and in very different conditions, and all of a sudden they're shooting 75s and 77s and wondering what happened. Well, it's because – but as you said, they're better prepared than ever coming out of high school and especially college now, with the competition, with equipment, with AJGA stuff, more things to play in when you're young, and they're better prepared. And, you know, it's more likely, I think, now than ever that a young person would win a State Am or State Open. We had Jordan Ibrugi win the State Open at age 18 when he was just graduated from high school a few years back.
The State Open qualifying began last week. Tuckaway Country Club held the first qualifier. It was won by an amateur out of Brookfield named Ryan Duffy with a 369. But a couple of notables that qualified: Gary, Zach Gaugert out of Wanakee, former Marquette golfer who's now trying the mini tours and based out of Scottsdale. Neil Johnson, who was very instrumental in getting the residency requirements relaxed a little bit, so native sons could come back and play in the State Open. He qualified with a 72, said he'll memo to self, I'll never try to qualify at Tuckaway again. It's still too hard. He lost the State Open exemption there back at the, when the State Open was there back in the early 2000s. And he said, I'm determined to get it back there. And he did, tying for third, but he only had a one shot variance. 73 played off. And one of the kids that qualified at 73, Cameron Huss out of Kenosha, who's headed to the University of Wisconsin this fall. So we had some good guys qualify through there. And then the second one was over at the Palmer course at Geneva National. And that was held last Thursday. And it took Corey Ahn, an amateur out of Lake Geneva, with a 72, and Mike Johnston out of now based out of Chandler, Arizona, with a 72. We all remember Mike from his days at Whitnall. And then Aiden Lafferty, who I believe might be a Marquette golfer, if I'm not mistaken. So yep. 74 qualified, and so far, Gary, the qualifying scores have been demanding. The course has been set up tough, and these guys that get through, you know, they're going to be tested going into the State Open next month down at Blue Mound.
You know, there's a real good chance, Rob, that it could be the most talented field ever for a State Open, which would be only fitting on the 100th anniversary at a great old style Seth Rayner, you know, Blue Mound Golf and Country Club. It's going to be a very strong field. There's no question about it.
So while Gary D'Amato was having fun out at Blue Mound, I was back here in my dual role of following golf in Wisconsin, but also being very in tune with what was going on out here in California. I coach golf, as I've said before on our podcast. And one of the issues coming up in the WIA is when are we going to play fall sports? Everyone is on pins and needles wondering what's going to happen. There's a proposal out there, Gary, that says from some administrators down in Southwest Wisconsin that's talking about moving fall sports into the front half of the spring season and playing girls golf from essentially the middle of March through the end of May. And then boys golf will be played from the end of May through July, which causes a lot of issues in terms of programming for the Wisconsin PGA and the Junior Tour and some of the summer tournaments that kids play. Out here in California today, they made the decision to condense three sports, the three seasons into two. Obviously, with the weather, we have a little bit more flexibility out here. But as it relates to golf, boys and girls golf will now be played. My girls team will play the same time as the JV boys that I coach. And in the same season in the springtime. And when beginning in March and going through the middle to late part of May before the postseason begins. What I wanted to do, Gary, is ask you, if you're in charge of the WIAA, seeing what California did out here, and I'll talk about some of the challenges that I'm going to be faced with here going forward, but I wanted to ask you before we get to that, so we have an unfiltered, really as objective as an opinion as we can get on this podcast. If you were Dave Anderson and the WIAA executive director and his board of control, how do you handle the issue of when to play sports and especially fall sports in Wisconsin, knowing that the next opportunity that you would have to, you know, at least with girls golf to tee it up would be once the snow clears, a very fluid thing, as we all know, in March or early April?
Boy, Rob, I think I punt. It's really, really a tough question. Obviously, coronavirus is still surging. It looks like it's gonna be around for a while yet. I know they're working on vaccines, and hopefully we have one pretty soon. But what do you do? I mean, we're talking about people not even going to school, and a lot of schools going to online again this fall. What do you do with the sports? What do you do with coaches who coach spring and fall sports? Do they have to pick which sport to coach them when you have everything condensed and packaged in the spring? I don't have a good answer, Rob. I think it's a multifaceted problem, and no matter what happens, there's going to be some people who are really disappointed no matter which way we go with this.
Well, let me address a couple of things as we look ahead to maybe what Wisconsin's going to do through the prism of California, what I heard today from the administrator for the CIF Southern Section. A couple of things. One thing was, you know, he could have left a couple of sports that are low risk sports like golf and tennis in the fall. And I still don't know if we're quite to the point yet where we want to deal with virtual learning, but in-person athletics. And that you mentioned that, and that is very much a conundrum for school administrators. The optics of playing sports on the one hand, yet and being together to do that, yet going to school in your house is kind of something that is hard to kind of wrap people's minds around. However, I maintain that, you know, at least at the school where I coach, it's 3,200 kids in the school complex during the day. It's 15 kids in a golf program, six playing at any one time in competition. There's a huge difference there. Is there an easy answer there? Certainly not, and they chose not to make one here. And they said the reason they chose not to keep golf and tennis in the fall was because, like you mentioned, Gary, that we're seeing across the country, cases of coronavirus spiking, and they didn't want to start a season then have to pull it out without the opportunity to then to reschedule it and kind of, you know, restart it in the spring or move it to the spring. They're going to do it now with the hope that we either, you know, have a vaccine or we have this under control, by the middle part of March when these seasons will start up again. So that's the key. But the pitfalls, you mentioned one. There's a coach in our league for girls golf that coaches two other sports, and they are now going to be in the same season, girls soccer and JV boys baseball. So that guy's got to figure out, you know, which does he want to coach in 2021 in the springtime, and how are they going to cover those other coaching responsibilities? And finally, for me, as I look at the sports I'm up against, we're going to be playing boys and girls basketball in the springtime. And we already play in soccer out here is normally a wintertime sport. It's been moved to the spring, and softball's still there. Those are three sports where we have kids on our girls golf team, where those sports have always been, at least in the past, their primary sports. And we may lose some of our better players to that and be left really with a group of very young novice beginners on the golf team. That's where we're at now. And like you said, Gary, it's not an easy decision. I'd be inclined like you to punt and punt to science, punt to the school administrators who are now looking at this not only through the eyes of athletics, but academics and through the eyes of, you know, what's best for the coaches, and especially the student athletes. I wrote a couple weeks ago about the impact with mental health that the cancellation of school and and not having sports in the springtime had on those kids. And we're faced with the same thing again this fall, and it's really starting to become a polarizing topic in the high school sports realm. And I just thought we'd spend a few minutes talking about it here, Gary, and I appreciate your insight on it. I kind of think that a delay in the season is probably the best thing as we step back from it. But I shudder to think what's going to happen if we get to the spring and we're no better off than we are right now.
Yeah, well, I really don't have any insight. You know, we knew what we were going to talk about in this podcast, and I've been thinking, what would I do? And I don't have any answers. I mean, I don't think not too many people have many answers right now about this whole thing. We're in uncharted water. We've never faced this kind of thing before, and there's no manual that's been written for high school coaches and administrators how to handle all these problems. So it's a tangled mess, and all we can do is make the best informed decisions that we can at the time, and hope this thing clears up in a few months.
Well, that's how I spent half my day, Gary. Before we get to the other half of it, I need to tell you that the club at Lac La Belle, all new, all improved golf course, now open in Oconomowoc, and you can see what all the talk is about and play one of the oldest courses in the state. Great history at the club at Lac La Belle, and you can book your tee time today at clubatlaclabelle.com. Gary, the competitive part of golf in Wisconsin was buzzing today. Let's start first at Blackhawk Country Club, the Wisconsin Women's State Amateur Championship. And I tell you, there was a lot of movement. What a fun course to have a championship on. We saw it with the senior match play earlier in the month, and now the Women's State Amateur. Rachel Coughlin, she shoots even par 72, birdied three holes in a row, Gary, for the first time in her young life. The Central Michigan recruit leads by one shot over Kaylee Kotlowski, who will be a senior this fall at Stoughton, who is also waiting to hear whether she'll be playing golf this fall or next spring. Three golfers tied at 74. Taylor McCorkle playing on her home course. She's from Oregon, Wisconsin, and a senior-to-be at North Dakota State University. Weber State University golfer Tatum Beck out of Waterford with a great round of 74 today. And Maggie Leaf, the veteran out of Pewaukee, also at 74. Gary, the leaderboard is bunched at the State Amateur for Women. You're scheduled to be there tomorrow. That's the good news. Jim Kelch tells me the bad news is that our colleague at Wisconsin.golf and our eighth photographer, tee times for the leaders supposed to begin about 2:30, 2:45, and there's weather expected in the area at that time.
Oh, boy.
Can we ever avoid weather in Wisconsin for our major championships?
I don't think so, especially late afternoon tee times. Things pop up later in the day. I might have to get a hotel room, Rob, in Madison somewhere. Any recommendations?
Let's see. That's a good question, because it'd probably be the in-towner down there by Camp Randall. It's probably the closest one to Blackhawk Country Club. I'd say out by Middleton, but you're coming from the other direction. So that might be the one. I would expect they're going to try everything they can to get this thing in. One of the things that they've already had to deal with, and I feel bad, Gary. I was that old man, you know, today yelling at Bill Linneman and Thomas Fazio. I didn't understand why we were only playing 18 holes in championship flight. And then they reminded me we're living in a COVID era, Gary. And in Dane County, COVID-19 has restricted cart usage to one per cart. And between that and then just trying to space out the tee times, they're playing at 10-minute tee times. There wasn't enough time or enough carts to send them around twice. So what normally is a 36-hole opener was reduced to 18 holes today. All four flights playing 18 today and then 18 again tomorrow, weather permitting. So that was one thing. And then it took a 6.5 handicap or less to get in the championship flight. I told you what's going on in championship flight, but I do need to give some props to – it might be the greatest first flight in the history of the state women's amateur. Pat Royce out of Deerfield with a 77, another veteran golfer, leading by one over Andrea Schlieper out of Fitchburg. Andrea Schlieper played a high school golf at Verona and is headed up to UW La Crosse to join Dave Table's program. And I don't believe they're playing first flight and the other flights quite as long as they are championship flight. But, you know, 77, 78 on Blackhawk Country Club is saying something. The one thing about championship flight today with the two gals that were at the top of the leaderboard, I mentioned Rachel Coughlin with three birdies in a row for the first time in her career. Kaylee Kitlowski got to number 10 at 5 over par, and then goes birdie, birdie, birdie on 11, 12, and 13. Made a 40-footer on 12 in the middle of that run. Pars 14, birdies 15, and then pars in. And there was a lot of movement, Gary, in those closing holes. You've been out to Blackhawk Country Club, 14 and 15, really tight up and through the woods there. You have a par 3 on number 16. And then I don't know if there's a more slanted fairway in the state than number 17, which is the longest par 4 in the course for this tournament. And I think if we can at least get this tournament down to that point where they're battling down the stretch, you're going to see a lot of fireworks on the back nine at Blackhawk.
Well, I hope so, Rob. And as you mentioned, it's a great leaderboard. I'm just looking at it right now as we speak. And, wow, there's lots of names that we expected to be near the top that are near the top. Maggie Leaf, Hall of Famer, Wisconsin Golf Hall of Famer, tied for third. And Rachel Coughlin, obviously the leader. I'm looking forward to tomorrow, Rob. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, as long as the rain stays away.
As long as the rain stays away. 15 golfers within 5 shots of the lead, a couple others to look out for. Amy Kucera, who contended last month at the Wisconsin State Women's Open. She plays at Xavier of Ohio and is spending the summer at her family's home in summer home in Fontana. Grace Suter, who's spent the last 6 months down at the Mike Bender Elite Golf Academy out of Oconomowoc, graduated from Oconomowoc High School in December and is going to spend one more year down there and then look to play college golf after that. Ashley Stolen, who played at Cardinal Stritch UW Eau Claire, and then stopped playing college golf. And she has played a lot of golf at Blackhawk Country Club, and she's right there at 75 as well. But a wide open field, and especially if you can get it going on some of those short holes, there's a lot of birdie opportunities. It's just a matter of avoiding the big number. That was the problem today for Taylor McCorkle. She had a triple bogey on her back nine, and Tatum Beck had a bounce back from a triple bogey on her front nine with birdies at 14 and 15. She played her last holes, her last 8 holes in 2 under. So, again, a lot of promise for some excitement tomorrow if we can avoid the weather down there at Blackhawk Country Club. Gary, one of the great stories in golf today out of the state of Wisconsin, George Kneiser out of Oconomowoc. Recent grad out of UW Green Bay, the 2019 Horizon League champion. In only his second professional event, shoots 63 in a Monday qualifier for the Korn Ferry Tour event this week down in Springfield, Missouri. And he wins that by one and is in a Korn Ferry event here. And again, no Korn Ferry Tour, Q School late in the fall. You know, any opportunity you get to, as I told him today, you know, play the game within a game, see if you can get into an event and see if you can finish top 10 or top 25 and get into another one or two based on reshuffles. This is huge for this guy. And then we have another guy from Wisconsin, Zach Burry, whose dad has spent the last 4 years as the GM at Winnegaming Golf Course in the Appleton area. Zach, a former Illinois State golfer, qualified at a different site from George Kneiser with a 65. Again, as you know, Gary, from watching all these, leaderboards and all these schedules get shuffled around, to have an opportunity is going to be huge for these kids this week on the Korn Ferry Tour.
It's a great opportunity for both those guys. You know, Rob, we've seen how many times have we seen guys who have tried, 10, 12, 15 Korn Ferry qualifiers in a year and not get in a single event because you have to shoot 63s and 64s and 65s to qualify for these events. That's how good the competition is. And once you open that door and step through it, hopefully these guys won't put too much pressure on themselves. I'm sure they're feeling some pressure because now they've got a chance to, to go on and to play more events if they play well here. So, but just play your own game, right? Don't do anything that you normally wouldn't do. Don't try to hit heroic shots. Play within yourself, and you never know what can happen.
You never know what can happen. 4 now Wisconsin golfers in the field this week. Dan Woltman and Jordan Niebuhrge, who took a rare week off last week in the second of 2 weeks down at in San Antonio. They'll be back this week. So 4 Wisconsin golfers in the field on the Korn Ferry Tour. And one last thing on George Kneiser. He told me, Gary, he's not a big Twitter guy, but he was, you've arrived in these Monday Q School things when or qualifiers when you get on the Twitter handle Monday Q Info at A Case of the Golf 1. And George Kneiser did as was pointed out today, he's 22. He's played one round as a pro. That was in the Rain Shorten Balance and Believe Invitational at Blackhawk Country Club. He qualifies with a 63 today. Another guy qualified today named Chris Thompson. He's 44 years old, Gary. He's been to the Q School 19 times, and last year was on the PGA Tour at age 44 for the first time. So, again, it's just crazy how, you know, golf shines its on different guys at different times. And a couple other stats on George Kneiser, thanks to A Case of the Golf 1 on Twitter. Highest ranking as an amateur, Gary, 2,455. And wow. The lowest competitive round he'd ever shot was a 64. And this was his first ever Monday qualifier. And he shoots 63 to get in. It's just crazy.
That is cool, Rob. That is really so cool. That's a great story.
We had a lot of great stories in the world of golf over the weekend. It was fun watching the Memorial, Gary, because 1 week after we saw a course set up where 19 under par got you in a playoff between Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas, and 57 golfers finished under par for 72 holes, we had 9 under win it. John Rahm, he moves to number one in the world, and only 9 golfers finished below par on the same golf course. I love golf. I love Muirfield Village. I love courses that can be tough 1 week and easy the previous week. And especially in this world in which we live with these, you know, with technology, with the golf ball, it sure is nice to see how the course superintendent can still have a say in the game of golf.
Yeah, that was fun to see. It was like a little bit like watching the U.S. Open at times. All you have to do is move some tees back, speed up the greens, and hide some pins, and all of a sudden, you know, 67s become 71s. So it was fun to watch. Did you see the incident with John Rahm's ball moving on his hole out?
I did. And is that the one where it was moving in the grass before the approach or the chip?
Yeah, and then he chipped it in. It was a fantastic shot. And, boy, the ball just kind of rotated one dimple, you know, but it was enough to incur that penalty. I just thought that was really interesting that he got penalized for that. He didn't see it move. He said he didn't see it move, and I believe him, of course. But it was interesting because Amanda, how do you pronounce her last name?
Balionis.
Balionis, yeah. She asked him about it, and after his round, and he was, you know, he had a look of surprise on his face because that was the first time he had heard from anybody that wow. He might be penalized. You'd think that some guy from the PGA Tour would have pulled him off the green immediately and said, we have to talk about something. But so he hears about it in the interview. So the whole thing was interesting. But yeah, 11 under he shot, but nine yep. under with the penalty. Tough course.
I thought kind of the reaction I saw on Twitter today was that it they may not have called it if he hadn't had such a large margin. If it had been a matter of winning the tournament or being in a playoff or not, they might not have gone down that road because, like you said, it was very minor. And then I thought, Gary, at one point in time, we had gotten to to that point where TV replays called in by viewers weren't going to necessarily – well, and I'm not sure this was called in by a viewer, but
– No, it was not, yeah.
TV replays weren't going to be such a big factor. I guess this doesn't quite fit that test. And if they were talking about it on CBS without, prompting from the outside, I guess I can see that. But, again, this instant replay thing is kind of – especially because as I watched the replay of the shot on social media, you really had to slow it down to see it move that much. And, mm-hmm. and when in really slow motion, yeah, it looked like it moved a lot, but in real time, it looked like it barely oscillated.
Yeah, it did. And you know, John Rahm is looking at the shot. He's lining it up. He's looking at the ball and then looking at, you know, where he wants to land the ball. And I'm sure it happened when he slightly pressed his club into the grass and the ball moved. I would bet money that at that point he was looking at the green and where he wanted to land the shot and never even realized the ball moved, if it moved. I guess you can say it moved a very tiny fraction of a bit. But, yeah, just an interesting situation. I hadn't seen that stuff on Twitter, Rob, about that they might not have called it. I think you have to call it no matter what, don't you?
I do, too. And it would have been a hard lesson to learn. And especially with yeah. the number one world ranking being on the line, he's only the second Spaniard ever to get there after yeah. Seve Ballesteros. But Yeah, that would have been a tough one. I can tell you this, Gary, I don't think that would have been called last week because I don't think the rough was that thick or that fluffy for a ball to move as the club's being, in its pre-shot routine.
Yeah, exactly. That's another factor. We talked about the way to toughen a course. They obviously let the rough grow up a little bit too. Fun to watch. Fun to watch those guys struggle a little bit instead of shooting 25 under every week.
Fun to watch indeed on a great golf course. Speaking of great golf courses, Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, recently celebrating its grand opening of its all-new golf course. One of the oldest and most historic golf courses in the state of Wisconsin can now be played by members and non-members alike. You can check out more on the golf course, book a tee time, all at clubatlaclabelle.com. Gary, as we wind down our podcast, we can kind of look back at some of the headlines from the last week. We've had a lot to write about here, and especially as it relates to tournament golf. We had the Par 3 Championship up at Sand Valley, a guy who I've known for a long, long time since his high school days at Lodi, Jason Mankey. Took a really unique approach, a lot of knockdown shots on the par 3 course to try to keep it under the wind, go around the bunkers. I haven't played the sandbox up at Sand Valley. I don't know if you have, Gary, but unique approach gets him in a playoff, and then he wins with a par on the first extra hole. Pretty neat to read how 46-year-old Jason Mankey was able to navigate what is certainly one of the premier par 3 courses in the country.
I have a little funny Jason Mankey story, Rob. Last summer, a bunch of guys and I went up to the Dells and played some golf. And one night we went out, had a couple beverages, and we decided to call Uber, you know, to take us downtown Wisconsin Dells and bring us home. And so we piled into a guy's car at the end of the night into an Uber car, and we're going home, and we started talking about golf. And the driver says, "Oh, Gary D'Amato in the backseat. Yeah, he knows who I am." And I'm like, "I do?" It was Jason Mankey. He was our Uber driver.
I love it. I love
it.
Well,
it was cool.
He used to be director of golf down at the Oaks in Cottage Grove, and then caught on at the Kalahari in a number of different roles. And with COVID-19, his job kind of got phased out this spring. He's been caddying up at Sand Valley, and a good guy. And I was really happy to see Jason win the Par 3 Championship, his first WSGA Championship of any kind. And we're good friends on Facebook, and I believe the previous one. Post before winning this thing was he was out with one of his kids playing junior, his kids now is old enough to start enjoying the game. So Jason, able to enjoy still competitive golf and on his own ball and then play with his kids. And I think that's really cool. A couple other things, Gary, the Junior Cup matches last week, Minnesota wins for the fifth year in a row up at Stevens Point Country Club. You talk about we talk about the redesign of the club at Lac La Belle. We talk about the old school course at in some of the tweaks they've made at Blue Mound. Stevens Point Country Club stepped in with Century World so close to host this. And boy, from what I heard, they rolled out the red carpet. Andy Landenberger was saying both the head pro and the GM were bussing tables at the banquet the night of after the first day of activity. So. But Point Country Club has really, I think, made a name for itself, Gary, and how well they dealt with a situation where they lost a lot of trees to a pesticide situation. Dennis McCann wrote about a few years ago, and they've come back really strong.
Yeah, I got a chance to tour Stevens Point Country Club during the renovation with Craig Halton, who we've talked about a lot on our podcast and written a lot about. Craig with Oliphant Golf and a really up-and-coming, I think, golf course architect in his own right. And I toured it, and you're right. Yeah, they lost a lot of pine trees because of that Imprelis, the Dow chemical. They got some money. They got a settlement from Dow. They redid their course, and it's really a first-rate golf course. It truly is.
Speaking of Stevens Point, UW Stevens Point has a new women's golf coach. Her name is Diane Gilbert. She's been the associate head women's basketball coach for the Pointers the last 10 years. We'll continue to do that. You can check out my Zoom interview with her on Wisconsin.golf. Gary, she was named the women's golf coach. A guy named Matt Hockett, who's their assistant men's basketball coach, was named the tennis coach. Third straight hire in the WEAC. That was an internal hire because of hiring stipulations currently in the state university system. But boy, Diane Gilbert brings a whole lot of energy to the to the new job, and a whole lot of background as to how to sell Division III sports. And you being a UW Whitewater grad, you know what Division III athletics are all about. it's neat when someone who's played Division III sports like Diane Gilbert, she played basketball for the Pointers as Diane Hawkins, and now she'll be able to coach. She'll be able to bring that, I think, passion and perspective to the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I actually remember her as Diane Hawkins, right? Basketball. She played basketball, you said, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember the name for sure. I didn't know that she has a golf background, huh?
She does not have a golf background, and she's not afraid to admit it. She has a love for the game. And okay. And so she's played a lot. She actually, well, I shouldn't say that, and she listens to this, she's gonna hunt me down. And she knows where I live because she her grandma or her aunt used to live out here in Temecula. But she worked at Central World for a while before she got married. So she got a real bug for the game and was able, obviously, to play at Central World. And what she's hoping to do is she's hoping to bring kind of the perspective on how to recruit effectively. And then she's looking for an assistant coach that has a pretty good background in the swing mechanics. And between the two of them, they will be able to kind of provide everything that a lot of the other successful programs in the league are providing. So that's kind of where she is. It's a unique situation, to say the least. She said that she admits she doesn't have nearly as much experience coaching golf as Matt Hockett does playing and coaching tennis. He was a state qualifier down at McFarland High School back in the day. And in fact, Gary, like this, another Facebook friend of mine, he posted pictures of he and his kids playing on the grass courts over at Sand Valley, the grass tennis courts over there. So again, you know, Central Wisconsin, you don't have to go far to play good golf and apparently good tennis, but I don't know that much about the latter. So
they've done a great job. Sand Valley with their grass courts.
And then before we get to, I'd like you to be able to tell us a little about your latest course review, Gary, but we need to give a shout out to Dennis McCann and the story he did over the weekend on Peter Nahm, former PGA pro at Minocqua Country Club. I think he's doing what we all want to do when we grow up, Gary. He jumped over to the other side and is now running a distillery in Minocqua that is quite successful. Yet, I should note too, though, he still plays golf. And as we kind of wrap back around to our talk about the upcoming Wisconsin State Open, Peter and his two sons, Caden and Anson. Caden is still in high school at Lakeland High School up in Minocqua, and Anson is going to be a freshman at UW-Stout. They will be in the field tomorrow at Bullseye Country Club in Wisconsin Rapids for the third qualifying site for the Wisconsin State Open. So we'll keep an eye on Peter and his kids. But I don't know, either a craft brewery or a distillery, Gary. I mean, I think that's you, me, Dennis McCann. I think we gotta try this at some point.
I agree. Yeah, that was a fun story by Dennis, and I see it's done really well on our website, Rob. It's a lot of traffic. It's a unique story. It's a fun story, and it's something that you wouldn't see anywhere else but on our website. So yeah, kudos to Dennis for unearthing that little gem.
And last but not least, if you woke up this morning and checked out the site, you saw Edelweiss Chalet Country Club in New Glarus prominently featured. Gary D'Amato's latest D-Time with D'Amato. Your course review, and again, we kind of teased it a little bit last week. It didn't take you long to play, and you liked almost every step of the way, except for the parts where you didn't finish strong, I believe. And we won't rehash that. But all in all, Edelweiss Chalet Country Club in the shadows of the New Glarus Brewing Company now, a great place to put on your can't-miss list if you are driving down in Green Dane County area.
Yeah, I loved everything about it except when I had to actually swing the club, Rob. Actually, though, I played well except for a couple holes. I had a couple blow-up holes, which seems to be my modus operandi these days. But, yeah, you know, I played with a buddy. We were a twosome, and the course was pretty stacked with foursomes ahead of us. And we just figured, oh, boy, this could be a long day. But we really never had to wait. A couple tees, we waited for maybe a minute. But we played in a little over 3 hours. And so those foursomes ahead of us were moving. And I asked Jeff Ellingson, the PGA general manager and head professional, if this is typical. And he said, it is. He said, our members play fast. And you get over 4 hours, and that's a long round of golf at Edelweiss. And I don't know about you, Rob, but a 5.5 hour round of golf just turns me off. No matter how good the golf course is, it's hard to get me to go back when it takes that long to play golf. And we breezed through this course, and it was fun. Except for the 8 I made on the final hole, Rob.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Gary. And back in the day when I was still in college and just getting out of college, in Madison. I got really tired of the long rounds at Odana Hills, and I went so far as to join up at Reedsburg Country Club because it was much the same thing. It was a lot like Edelweiss. The greens up at Reedsburg are fantastic, but the pace of play was what really, I could go up there, I could drive, 45 minutes up to Reedsburg, play in 3 to 3.5 hours and drive back in the time that would have taken to do the same thing at Odana Hills. So, And again, and that was before we really paid a lot of attention to pace of play, and that's gotten a lot better. So, good to hear that Edelweiss Chalet Country Club is doing that, and the pace is good, and the golf still great down there. And you also referenced too, it's 3 miles from the New Glarus Brewing Company. No tours this summer because of coronavirus, but you don't have to go far to find a Spotted Cow. And then one of the great restaurants from my time back in Wisconsin, the Sugar River Pizza Company. Right along the bike trail, Gary. If you can't get a Spotted Cow at the brewery, you certainly can at the Sugar River Pizza Company, and it's right along the outdoor seating, right along the bike path there, and it's just nothing like it during the summertime. We tried to get there at least once a summer, and New Glarus, known for much more than that with its Swiss heritage what a great area of the state. We have so many, don't we?
We do. I guess, Rob, you teased that restaurant. I'm going to have to go back there and eat there. I'm going to have to call Jeff Ellingson and line up another round of golf and try that restaurant.
You got to do what you got to do, Gary. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
No question about it. Well, Gary, appreciate the time this week on Talking.Golf. A lot to talk about, and hopefully you can get the round in tomorrow at covering the final round of the state women's amateur at Blackhawk, and we can review that next week as we look ahead to the Wisconsin – men's state amateur at Milwaukee Country Club, also right upon us. Gary, appreciate the time.
Thanks, Rob. One more thing. We've got some big news out of Kohler Company that we're going to break tomorrow, 8 in the morning on our website. Can't really talk about it, but I would encourage people to go to our website tomorrow morning and read what's happening up at Kohler Company.
It is huge. 8 o'clock tomorrow, Wisconsin.golf. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, which was recently celebrated its grand opening of its all-new golf course. That's right. They recently celebrated the grand opening of its all-new golf course. The rebirth of this historic course is now available for both members and non-members. The course is located conveniently between Madison and Milwaukee in the beautiful rolling hills of Oconomowoc. See what all the talk is about with this remake of one of the oldest courses in the state. Test your game with the native fescue grasses, undulating greens, and Scottish roots. Book your tee time today at club@laclabelle.com. This has been Talking.Golf. We'll see you next week.